Welcome to Linked Up, Breaking Boundaries in Education, a podcast that focuses on what is happening in education today, connecting everyone to the movers and shakers that are breaking boundaries in the education arena.
Welcome. This is Jerry and Jamie here at Linked Up. Jerry, we've really been doing a good job lately of connecting with people who are very focused on being student-centered in their work and really making sure that students are part of their learning process every step of the way, not being spoon-fed, but being advocates for their own learning. And we're going to dig into that a little bit more today, too.
We sure are. Our guest today is Dr. Ted Steck. So I was teasing him. I'm sure everybody does that we're going to have a TED Talk. We're talking to Ted. I was fortunate to meet Ted a couple of years ago through a mutual friend that we had. And when I was in the Chicago area, I actually took an Uber out to his school district to see what he was doing. And oh my gosh, this guy is the real deal. I had first heard about him, though, as he was selected as one of the top, it was either 10 or 20 superintendents to watch, to keep your eye on, because they are doing things. And I've known a lot of superintendents in my day, and I would say Ted is the top tier. He is fabulous. He is doing things. He's making things happen for kids. And that's what I just love about him, is that he's the real deal. He's not promoting himself. He's promoting the kids and the community. And right. I think that's wonderful. He's also just written a book called The Connection Mindset, which when I found out it came out, I downloaded it immediately. And I must say, Ted, I love the book because a couple of things. It's a pretty quick, easy read. And I like that, because sometimes I get in the middle of one and I lay it down and I never get back. But I did yours all in one setting. And it was inspiring and invigorating. And I really did enjoy it. So without further ado, we are going to say welcome to this TED Talk. Hello.
Thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
Oh, we're so excited to have you. But first of all, we have to ask, where in the heck are you?
That background is something.
Yeah. Yes.
So I'm in actually a professional studio in Oak Brook, Illinois right now. And it's funny because I always preach, and from my book, it's all about the connections you make with people. And this studio is called Panascape. And it was a friend of mine from 30 years ago. We were really good friends in high school and in college. And we drifted apart over the years. And we just happened to run into each other at the gym a few months back. And my book just came out. And ironically, read the book and was so impressed and started asking me questions. And then he said, "You know what, Ted, you need to talk to whoever the superintendent is at Lombard School District, because they built this thing called the Connect Center that's super amazing. My kid goes there after school for their travel basketball, but whoever thought of that is a genius." And I said, "Wow, you're talking to them." That was my project when I first became superintendent. And so we just started collaborating and talking, and his media platform that he created, I saw a school use on how to connect community, how to connect schools and colleges and trade schools and middle schools. And we're working collaboratively together as a strategic partnership to start instituting some of these technologies in schools. And the first one for schools will be in that Connect Center. So it's just funny how things work out and come together.
And Ted, the thing I love about you is you do have all of these connections, but we always hear about connecting community. And I always also hear in the second breath, "But I don't know how to do this, really hard." Da, da, da. You make it happen. You just make it happen. So what's your secret sauce?
It's interesting. I have always been that person where I believe in treating people the way you want to be treated. And over the years, I always say that's the golden rule in any kind of faith, any kind of religion, anything. Like, it's not fun to do. And over the years, I keep in contact. No matter where I'm at, I try to talk with people and engage in conversation. And you never know where the road may lead you. I don't have the secret sauce. I guess I'm just me, and I'm interested in people because I think you can learn something from every single interaction that you have.
Right.
We've gotten that advice before. We've heard that before. And I actually have taken that once in a while when maybe it didn't feel comfortable or natural. But it's important to do that. And you realize, just as you just described, the story you just described, just it was a connection from 30 years ago and then reconnecting. And now you have different possibilities and all that way. So this person, though, I'm curious, you said from high school and college, did this person get into education? Were you both in an education program in college? How did you get into education? How did all that start?
So I got into education. It's interesting because my father was an educator in Chicago public school system for 44 years. And I did not want to follow in his footsteps at first.
Yeah. Same story here. Yeah.
So right out of college, I did a couple different things in the business world and just got into a time where I was coming back. I lived in Kansas City for a little bit. I lived in North Carolina for a little bit. And I decided that home is Chicago. So I came home and I was actually looking and I was studying for the LSATs. I wanted to go into law school. And so I started studying and enrolled in law school. But in the meantime, my dad said, hey, we need a math teacher. And it was a school in Chicago. And at that time, I was working on with a provisional certificate. So they threw me in a class with 7 kids. And I found out that it was October and I was the teacher in that classroom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, those kids, I knew it was a tough shell. And they just felt like, all right, this is another one. How long is this one going to last? First day in the classroom, there was a fight that happened between 2 kids, and I was actually stabbed with a pencil.
Oh my God.
And right away, my dad challenged me. He said, what are you going to do? Are you going to quit? Or are you going to connect with those kids?
Mm-hmm. I stayed
in that classroom, immediately transferred into an educational program at Roosevelt University. And I said, I want to make a difference. So to this day, I still keep in contact with 3 out of those 7 kids. And that was over 20 years ago. So it was just in me. And it was like, don't fight who you are.
Yeah.
And I got so much from that first interaction. And I saw the difference I was making with those kids. One, I challenged them. I actually gave them an old lawnmower that my dad was going to throw away. We fixed it up and he needed to make some money. He was having a child while he was in high school. And now he's one of the biggest, most successful landscapers in the Chicagoland area.
Oh my gosh. That is a wonderful story.
And I think those are the things that educators forget about sometimes, but we do make an impact and you never know when that guidance or that inspiration can have a profound life-changing impact on our lives. So that's my pathway into education.
Oh, that's a great story. So Ted made you want to write your book. Your book is about the connection mindset. How did you get to a point that you wanted to do that?
So I will admit to you, I am not a writer any means. I was the kid in school that had to constantly go to the writing lab. I don't even know when we went to school if there was a writing lab, but I can remember being in college constantly getting help writing. I don't feel like I'm a great writer, and maybe that's why the book is pushed short.
I like it.
But it was challenging for me because I tried to sit down and I just journal a lot. And I journal and write my thoughts and self-reflect almost on a daily basis. And through COVID, it was challenging for everyone. And I think it was very challenging for a lot of educators. And I have a very supportive wife. And every night we would come home and she would just ask me about my day and I would start talking and we would get on different philosophical discussions. And unbeknownst to me, she was taking notes the whole time. And after about 4 or 5 months, my wife was an extraordinary writer. And after 4 or 5 months, she gave me this packet of paper. And I said, what's this? And she said, I've been listening to you for 4 or 5 months, and I think you have something here, and I'm organizing your thoughts. So she actually wrote the book with me, and she was the one that gave me the structure that I needed. And we wrote the book together, and she helped me formulate everything. And honestly, I never thought that I would have a book. And then I turned over all my journals and my notes, and she helped me organize that and put it all in a book form. So this book would not have happened if it weren't for my wife supporting me and listening. And I'm forever grateful to her for that.
And I think districts are grateful too, because it's a very inspiring book and it inspires leaders for sure. So thank you to Ted's wife.
It's a cool story. I love that. True partnership.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Ted, tell us a little bit about your school district. What sets it apart, do you think, from other school districts? Just give us some.
Sure. So, the school district's in the western suburbs of Chicago. I always call it the best kept secret in DuPage County. We're a school district made up of roughly 3,100 kids. There's 6 elementary schools, 1 big middle school in an early childhood center. And obviously, I think our staff and our community sets us apart, where it's a very family first type atmosphere, very supportive. And I just can't speak enough about it. It's a great area. It's a great school district with great people. But one thing that we've tried to do as a school district to set ourselves apart from other school districts is think different. And this one thing that we do on a daily basis is we challenge each other on how do we think differently? How can we think outside the box? Because one thing that I've noticed through, especially after the pandemic, but in education in general, because most educators, once they get into education, they stay in for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's how do we continue to adapt and evolve to meet the needs of the kids? And I think sometimes when things get hard, we rely on what we've always done. And the one thing that I will not tolerate, and I don't think anyone should, is a rationale for doing something is this is the way we've always done it.
Oh, yeah.
That is my pet peeve. So every single day we challenge each other to how do we think different? How do we think outside the box? Take risks. You're supported. And I think that's the culture and the climate that has been established in Lombard. And I'm just trying to keep that going. That's what I think. And I'm not critiquing any other school district, but we really pride ourselves in thinking differently and constantly evolving to meet the needs of our kids. So I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, I think it's such an important point. I always have said the risk takers are the best teachers. They really are. But there needs to be that culture and that support system from administration in order for teachers to feel comfortable and confident to take risks, to innovate, right? To think out of the box. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges in education, but you found the solution, and that is to be their best cheerleader and be supportive of them. What are some other challenges that you think that you see we're facing in education in general?
Your point, Jamie, it's a lot of things when it's a top-down decision-making. Some of the mandates and some of the things that are put on school districts are very hard. And there's no better example than the evaluation system here in Illinois. 30% of every administrator's or teacher's evaluation has to be tied to test scores. ultimately, even though it's only 30%, but I think it's extremely unfair to judge a school district's success after one or two data points given to a kid, knowing we don't know what's really going on with that child on that particular day.
Right.
But we are forced to feel that. So that pressure that our teachers feel for that, or our administrators, and let's call it for what it is. Unfortunately, that's how a lot of school districts get judged. And that's very wrong to do so, because there are school districts out there, if they're being judged on, let's just say a high school is being judged on ACT or SAT, I can tell you for sure that wealthier areas have a huge advantage because they do have the ability to hire private tutors, to do things outside of school, to get those test scores up. Why are we being judged off of things that the school doesn't have a direct impact on? So get back to your previous question, is what sets Lombard 44 apart is we've made a strong push as part of our strategic plans that kids are more than a test score, that it's about the process. It's not about a data point. So I talk about this in my book a little bit, but we really try to live in and breathe it every single day. Let's look at a data point and say, this is why we're successful or this is why we're not. And I see it happening across school districts, and it makes me so upset. And I tell this story to people. My nephew, and I talk about this in my book, but my nephew, when he was entering high school, he was two grade levels behind in reading and math. And he was struggling. He had a lot of life-changing events. My brother was going through a lot of things, and my nephew's mother was going through a lot of things. And I really got a chance to work with my nephew. And his freshman year in high school, he was barely getting a 2.0. He was worried that he was going to not even make the football or wrestling team. He didn't have any friends. He started a new school in a new area. And by the time he was a senior, he was getting all A's. The first time he took the ACT, he scored a 16. He took it 7 times. He ended up getting a 23.
Wow.
He was not the biggest kid, but he decided that he wanted to play football in college. He walked on to the University of Iowa, being the smallest lineman ever in Iowa history. By the time he was a senior, the head football coach brought him in there. He was academic all Big Ten, and he earned a scholarship. Now, when you take a look at my nephew in a snippet, 16 on the ACT, wasn't an all-state football player. He was a below-average athlete and student by anyone's measuring stick. But when you look at that process that he went through over the past 8 years, that is success. And yes. I tell that story because there are a lot of people that could score higher on the ACT. There are a lot of people that are taller, bigger, better at football. It's about having goals, but it's about embracing the process, embracing the development, and that is growth. And we are trying to implement that mindset in Lombard. We don't want the best test takers in the world. We want kids that will come in and they are better at executive functioning skills. They're social, emotionally, and mentally growing. And it's those soft skills that we talk about. They're happy. They're content. They're lifelong learners. They're curious. They're passionate. And that's what we try to tap into every single day in our school district. And it's hard. And I'm not saying we're perfect at it, but that's what we strive to do.
It teaches them, it gives them that foundation for being that determined and have perseverance so that whatever challenge that they encounter in their lives, they're able to overcome it. And I agree, that's what you really hope for. Yeah, top scores, all of that. But if you can have a high percentage of your student body coming out with that confidence and that ability to navigate life, that's what we care about. It really is. It's so important. I love it.
So I'm going to ask you, why don't we measure that or applaud that in school?
And right. So yeah, that's what I said was what are the challenges? So you've come up with the challenges. What are your solutions? How do we do that? How do we break down those roadblocks we have with testing, right? And that type of measurement. So what do you think? How do you do it?
I like how you flipped the script. I was asking you. I don't have the exact. I think it comes through education. It's working with parents, working with the community, and giving the teachers the support that this is what matters most. Not the 30% of your evaluation.
Right.
It's the other part. And it comes down. I always say this. You started out the podcast. What does it truly mean to be student-centered and student-focused? How often do we really dig down and ask our students, how are they feeling? How are, you know, what are their needs? Maybe we give a survey. But one thing that I'm doing in our district, I have what I call student focus group. And I meet, my goal next year is to meet with a group of students every single week. And I'm talking about these things and I'm working with them, but I'm also challenging my staff that they need to do that in their classroom consistently. Start having reflection journals and go over with them. But not only that, but ask them if you're meeting their needs. How can you meet their needs better? And I think that should be a part of that feed. I call it a feedback loop that needs to happen more. And we need to support our teachers to be vulnerable and ask students that question. It was so interesting. In my last focus group of the year, right before the end of the school year, I asked a group of fifth graders and we asked a lot of different questions, but after about 45 minutes, I felt like they felt comfortable with me. So I throw it out. I said, now that we're wrapping up, tell me something that you want me to know about you, anything. And the responses overwhelmingly they said, Dr. Steck, I want you to know how many followers I have on Instagram. I want you to know how popular I am. I want you to know how many hits I got on my last post. And I said, wow, that would have been the last thing that I would have thought I would have received from them. But how do we know? And how do we know how to modify and evolve to meet our students' needs if we don't truly know what they need? We can make assumptions and we can ask the parents what they need, but I'm not necessarily certain
that they know. Yes.
So one thing I did to do this, so I recently had a middle school principal opening and I went through an extensive process. And one of the questions I asked all the candidates is I asked them, I said, everyone has a promotion ceremony or a graduation ceremony. We've all been through it. We've all witnessed it. We've all probably, all the administrators had to run one. But I asked the question, is it student-centered? And they all looked at me and their gut reaction was as absolutely students. I said, but is it? Have we ever asked students, how can we get better with our promotion or with our graduation? And they said, wow, we never thought about that, but you're right. Students just want to get it over with. It's for the parents. And I said, really? Because I just went through this with my daughter at her high school graduation. It was not for the parents. Maybe pictures were, but I couldn't see my student or my daughter walk across the stage. For 3 seconds, I heard her name. Then I couldn't see. I was in the stands and the stage was across the football field. I didn't know any of the people that spoke. And so then we started talking and I wanted to dig down and challenge the candidates to think differently. After we talked and they tried to come up with in a 5-minute segment what they would want promotion or graduation look into. And I said, I reflect back to June of 2020. If you remember, that was a few months after the pandemic hit. Right. And what we did in our district is we did a multi-layer approach to 8th grade promotion. And what we did is first we created a keepsake that was a slideshow made up from all of the kids about their classmates. So everyone got hand-delivered their diploma and this keepsake from their teachers that they knew that they were with all school year, But then we went out on a caravan and we encouraged our parents to have their own personal party at their house. And we were going to come by and celebrate with them and give them a certificate, an award, something like that from their teacher. And it took a lot of time. It took a lot of effort. But to that, from that day on, that was the best promotion that we've ever had. But we went back to tradition. Why? Because that's the way we've always done it. So with this new principal, I'm challenging him and his staff to go back to making it more student-centered and more about what the kids need, not what's tradition, not what's expected, and not what's easy. Because too often, another challenge that we're facing in education is we do things to check an item off the box.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough for our kids.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But you're right. It's about really connecting with the students to find out what is important to them, what they would actually want, what would make most meaning for them. And sometimes when we have situations like COVID, it gives us that opportunity to have that different approach, that different vision that we always call the silver lining of COVID. I think that's helped us a little bit to see that. But I agree. And I think, too, working hard to make sure that things are student-centered, things are, again, truly student-centered from what the students are looking for and want and need, and not necessarily for them or what we think they need. But it is also about, because I asked you earlier about how do we get to that point and how do we break the system, right? If we're looking at, you have that 30%, mm-hmm. How do we? It's also about communicating with parents, too, and getting past what their expectations are as well. But I think staying true to your values in that is challenging, but you're sticking to it. And I think that's great.
It's tough. And I challenged my principals. Yesterday, I had a meeting with my principal. And I asked them this question. How do you know if your kids in your school are ready to learn?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, the deep discussion we had. And we came to the conclusion, we didn't have a definite answer, but it started getting everyone to think differently. No matter what you do, no matter what curriculum you have, no matter what environment, new furniture, everything that you can do, but there's that, how do you know if that child is ready to absorb that day's lesson? How do you know that child isn't dealing with all of these other social, emotional things? Or how do you know that they're mentally, physically, and emotionally safe and ready to learn? Is that question you have to connect with them. That teacher better, or that principal better, know those students as well as their parents, or not better. We spend more time with them. With all the after-school activities and everything that we do running around as parents, the teachers have the most influence and contact with that child. And if that child, it was amazing too, if they're not, I asked students that, like what it means to them. And the answers that you receive from them are things that you would never expect. And it differs per grade level as well. And a lot of it has to do with their peers at certain ages. I spent a lot of time with our middle school students as well, in how much they put on peers, social media. And if that ever gets out of whack, they're not ready to learn. But that's a huge challenge in education, is how do we know that? How can we measure that? How can we not? We all been there as educators. When a kid is not ready to learn, you think they're being disrespectful and you think that it's your fault, or you think this child just doesn't want to learn. I feel that every child wants to learn. They're just not always ready to learn because of all the other things that they're dealing with as they grow up.
It's all about Maslow. And sometimes we get on this, I always say September, we get on this train and all of a sudden it's progress report time and the holidays and report cards are due and then you do it all over again. But if you are not taking the time to reflect on what you're doing, if you're not taking the time to actually connect with the students, which I completely agree with you, it is the most important thing, then we're totally missing the boat. We really are. And I think this is such a simple yet powerful way that you are challenging your staff. Mm-hmm. Really, just a simple question. Are they ready? Are they ready?
And Ted, before we close today, because I know you're on a strict time schedule, I wanted to talk to you about one more thing. And that is, when I visited your district, you were building the Connect 44. Is that the Connect 44 Center? Which was amazing. I want to come back and see it now in completion. But can you tell our audience what that is and what the vision for this center was?
Absolutely. So I would say roughly 6-7 years ago, when I first became superintendent, we had some challenges that we had to tackle, and space was an issue at our middle school. We were utilizing every square foot of the building. We recently brought a lot of special education programs back to the middle school that were used to be outsourced. And so we were utilizing every square foot of the building. And so I said, okay, the board challenged me and they said, Ted, we need to add on to the builder. And I said, okay. And they said, but you cannot go out for referendum. We can't ask our taxpayers for more money. Number two, you have to operate under our current budget. So you need to take away from something to pay for something. So I said, wow. So right away, I said, this is a tough problem. So I started asking. I had no idea. So I started asking. I started with my cabinet team, the staff at Westlake, and I brought in community members, and we just started brainstorming things. And what people always think of first is, okay, let's build an addition here, and then we can do this. I always call that a simple solution that's going to cost money, and we don't have the money. So part of where this started coming in is I did have a background in some construction, and I worked doing physical fitness centers before I got into education. So I thought to myself, I said, what if we could utilize it? If we're going to build, the cheapest way to build anything is big, large spaces per square foot. But then from meeting with the community, I said, one of the concerns that I was hearing from the community is how they have to travel far distances for travel basketball, travel baseball, travel volleyball. And they were wasting a lot of time in the car and in traffic to meet their kids' needs. And if we could have something in our area, and I calculated that if we could keep half that money that our community is already spending, we can build this place. So that was the birth of the Connect Center. And so I felt that we can utilize and we can move a lot of our elective spaces and make really cool spaces for our kids to learn during the day, but our community could come in at night and they don't have to drive 30, 40, 50 minutes to meet the needs of their family. So at night after 5 o'clock, it's used completely by local travel sports teams or local organizations. And during the day, it's used by all of our students. So it was a great win situation. However, while we were building it, we started meeting the needs that even though we brought a lot of the special ed programs back to the building, there were still some kids' needs that we still had to outplace. So I converted part of the building and had a strategic partner with a therapeutic school that we put a therapeutic school within the Connect Center as well, that a lot of our kids that were sitting in a bus for 30, 40, 50 minutes to get their needs met now are coming to our school and still feel connected. On top of that, it evolved with talking with some of our students that now, and Jerry, I don't know if I even mentioned this when we met last, but we are doing a lot of inter-district field trips where we're bringing our third, fourth, and fifth grades partly for our transition initiative so they don't feel so intimidated by going to the middle school, but they'll be coming to our school on a monthly basis, do team building, leadership training, or just a Like I'm working with Cirque du Soleil to do a field trip. We're working with a local arboretum to come and do different things. We're working with conventions. And so it's really a community center / event center, educational center, all wrapped up into one. And it's used from 7 a.m. until 10 o'clock at night. It's amazing. And I'm just starting to see even more ways to connect our students, connect the community. Like we're doing a senior citizen event where they're coming in and our kids are teaching the seniors on how to use technology. We have pickleball tournaments. There's things that it just keeps evolving. Like it's a snowball that it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And it's exciting about the potential and the possibilities that it's bringing to Lombard.
Jamie, do you see why he was one to watch?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it always boils down to your mission, like keeping people connected. There's that connection.
Right.
And I think that's what it's all about. It's wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful and innovative.
We like to end the show by asking a very reflective question. And that is, in all of this work that you've done, what has become clear?
What has become clear? Wow. I think more than anything is we cannot be satisfied with this is the way it's always been done. We need to continually evolve as a community, as a society, as educators, to constantly challenge ourselves and what truly does growth look like. And it's about the process. It's about coming together. It's about being vulnerable. It's about finding passion. And that's what we strive for in Lombard. And I think in general, as a community, as a nation, that education is the greatest profession I feel in this country, but it comes with a lot of responsibility and we need to surround ourselves by great people and we can do it. I know that's maybe clear as mud, but it's how I truly feel to the core of who I am.
And you can tell that because you make it happen. You really do. We want to thank you so much for being on the podcast today and sharing your insights. How can people find your book?
So it's out on Amazon, The Connection Mindset by Ted Stack. It's starting to get some traction forever. You've been through the editing process, but that's it. And it's just about getting that book out there. First step in changing that mindset and what we value most as educators.
We will link it in our show notes for sure, so everyone can have access to it.
Very nice. Absolutely. And are you on Twitter or social media? Can people follow you?
Jerry, no, I'm not.
I don't doubt that because I don't know when you would have time.
You know, I'm going to tell you that is shame on me. Shame on me. But I do need to get on that. I take one thing at a time.
You're making a lot of things happen. You really are.
I rely on wonderful people like you and Jamie to help with the social media aspect of this.
Spread the word.
Yes. Thank you so much. We appreciated talking to you and hearing your stories. They were fantastic. And we wish you a great summer and a great start to a new year.
Wonderful. And let's keep in touch and I'll talk to you guys.
Thank you so much, Ted.
Thank you for listening. And if you would like to stay linked up, be sure to follow us on Apple and Spotify and subscribe to us on YouTube.